imitation salute. It appeared to satisfy the Ostlander, who saluted again, even more briskly than before, and quick marched through the puddles in the rocks to where a short column of horse and hand-drawn wagons was just beginning to trickle into the clearing. Peasant families clung grimly to the sides or trudged alongside. Felix gave his nephew's hand one last squeeze, then cupped the man's pearl-white guard brace in his hand and eased him gently away. Whatever his feelings about it, these people, desperate as they clearly were, looked up to him. They needed their hero, and for as long as the body remained willing, then Felix would play that role.
"Where are you going?" said Gustav.
"To see if I can see where we are," Felix replied, nodding towards the high hill that the poor doomed Hochlanders had fought to the last man to hold.
Unidentifiable bits of meat glistened in the rain. It looked like a butcher's cart had been struck by a mortar. The hilltop was deserted, understandably so, but for a moment Felix thought he glimpsed a dark figure outlined in black against the grey clouds above the summit. A frisson of dread passed through him, utterly convinced for one irrational moment that the figure spied on him on behalf of the darkness he sensed from the forest. In the space of a shiver, the feeling was gone, as was the figure, and Felix wished he could say that the two had been unrelated. But the figure had been Max Schreiber. Cartilage crunched beneath him as Felix pushed himself to the top of the hill. Blood oozed up from underfoot. Further from the epicenter of the carnage, men and beastmen, more or less intact, lay across each other, appearing to fight each other even in dismemberment and death. Felix covered his mouth, not so much against the smell as the taste. Flies droned around him, perhaps mistaking him for a corpse, and in spirit, surrounded by so much death, he felt like one. He swatted at the buzzing pests, more out of form than the belief that anything Felix Jaeger could do here would make the slightest difference to anything.
"Are you up here, Max?"
he said, uncertain why he whispered or why his heart beat so hard. He crunched to the summit with a grimace and turned full circle. Meat glistened. The rain made dimples in puddles of blood. Trees extended out from the clearing in every direction, whispering and downcast under the rain. The Empire was rather like a dwarf hold, Felix thought. Those men fortunate enough to visit the dwarfs' ancient fastnesses would see only the glittering audience halls beyond the mountain gates, but their deeps plumbed further into the darkness than that. The Empire was the same, its deeps hidden by tangled bowers rather than by stone. It was a sprawling country, and perhaps in days before these, even a great one. But take away its roads, its boats, and the Empire became a far darker and vaster land than even Felix could have believed. It made the deeds of Sigmar and his descendants even more inspiring. Those were heroes, living in a time of legends. Felix's own deeds felt trifling by comparison. He peered through the falling grey sheets in the direction he thought was north. It looked like mountains on the horizon, but that couldn't be right. They were shadowing the Beckerfen to Talabheim Road. There were no mountains in Talabekland. Max? Relief crept guiltily into his thoughts at the realization that the wizard was not here. He turned to leave. In the clearing below, a few hundred men and a half a dozen wagons assembled. He looked to the endless tracts of forest, and then to the mist-shrouded mountains in the north. He prayed that they weren't lost.
"The end time's near, Felix."
Felix flinched at the voice from behind him. The warmth leached from his veins, and there was very little he wanted more in this world than to never have to turn around and face the man that spoke. He unclenched his fists, took a moment to steel his courage, and then turned. The rain flattened the old wizard's hood against his face and brought a glisten to his ashen hands, exposed to the wrist where they held the simple yew staff upon which he leaned. Once of proud ivory and gold, his long magister's robes were now bleached grey like his skin. More by memory than by their faded thread, Felix picked out the elaborately embroidered geomantic symbols and coiling, self-cannibalizing snakes.
I noticed, Felix replied, intending to sound light and failing miserably.
The wizard's captivity at the pleasure of the Troll King had damaged him, but his strange condition had only worsened since Prague. It troubled Felix to see the last of his old friends in such a sorry way, but Max was far beyond his or anyone's ability to help. Max stared through Felix. The whites of his wide eyes were dark, and their gaze clove to something distant, a realm of horror that he and he alone could see.
The Chaos Moon cracks asunder, and falls from the heavens in a firestorm of corruption and death. The Isle of the Dead unravels, and mighty Ulthuan sinks to the ocean's bottom while her chilled twin falters before the handmaiden of Khorne. Old certainties fade as new gods arise, and the greatest host of demonkind since the last days of Anarion musters in the corners of my mind. Your eyes are closed, and you notice little, Felix. Oh, so little. If you saw but a fraction of what I must.
Neither of us are children, Max. I've walked the great bastion of Cathay. I've seen the old ziggurats in the Southlands jungle. I know that chaos is everywhere. But that's why we have to fight. Max bowed his head.
You do not understand at all.
You could have stopped this, Felix replied after a time,
looking down as he slid his foot back and forth through the gory leftovers of men and beasts.
That sorcerer was no match for the Max I remember.
I thought about it.
To Felix's own surprise, he started laughing.
It was a black laugh, the sort that only a man who had administered the ultimate mercy to friends in want of a healer as skilled as Max Schreiber could give.
I hope for all our sakes you found some answers.
Yes, some. And I knew that this was too petty an engagement to account for you or for Gotrek. You have a destiny, Felix, said Max urgently, as Felix began to turn away. Since we first set out together to slay the dragon, Skjallandir, I have believed it. And with all that remains of me, I know it now. It was not chance that brought us together then. And it is not hubris to turn to fate for an explanation of what brings us all together again now.
Felix tried to hold Max's eyes, but couldn't. Their gazes slid across one another, the spaces they inhabited immiscible as oil and water. Felix shivered and wiped rain from the back of his neck, chilled to the marrow by the wizard's talk and angered by how powerfully it had affected him. His destiny, such as it was his own and no other's. The thought that some unknowable being might have done this to him infuriated him more than the fundamental loss of control over his own fate that such interference implied.
We're not all together, though, are we? Some of us aren't here.
Only those that needed to be.
Felix's lips flared in sudden rage, and his hand moved of its own volition to the hilt of his sword.
Snorri, Ulrika, how dare he?
The rain pommeled Max's hood as the wizard beheld the middle distance. With a sigh, Felix let go of his sword. It wasn't the wizard's fault. He was sick, a man with an infected wound. He had not chosen to be this way.
You should go,
Max murmured, nodding downhill. On the nearest patch of flat ground between the hill and the tree line, a gang of unarmored men, women, and even children were busily erecting an impromptu command tent over the back of an open-topped wagon. As Felix watched, Gotrek and a handful of others gravitated towards it.
The Hawklander's commander is the bearer of bad tidings. Your nephew has just heard, and convenes a council of war captains.
A prickle of unease stitched down Felix's spine.
How can you know that?
Max sighed. It looked as though he closed his eyes, but with grey eyes and grey skin, both concealed under a hood, it was difficult to be certain of anything, Some powers I abjure by choice. Others force their visions through my shuttered eyes and invade my dreams. Felix spun around, his heart turning loops, and tried to pick out Gustav amidst the mismatched uniforms and mud paraded under the rain below. He could see a pocket of Hochlanders in their red and green, but there was no sign of his nephew.
"I would advise you to hurry,"
said Max, serene as a passing breeze.
"Gotrek Gurnison is about to be the recipient of bad news."
Rain tapped on the leaves above the solemn bier as it traipsed southwards in unexpected defeat. Camgeen Lastborn, the ever-changing spear of the Silver Road, tried to ignore it and lapsed back into unconsciousness. The pain from the wound in his back was terrible, worse even than the ritual scarifications his father had inflicted upon him in his trials of manhood. Pain was just a feeling, a weakness like pity or affection. He told himself that, but the rain's insistent rap on his armor demanded he pay notice and take heed. By the Dark Master of Chaos, it hurt. He opened his eyes and blinked away the dreams of torture and sadistic, androgynous demon fiends. Were they dreams, or were they memories? It was difficult to know. He had lived long and suffered much, both before he had donned Zinch's armor and after. Casting the past to the past, he took in his surroundings. Tall trees rose above him, carving up the grey light into meagre portions of light and shadow. The rain rustled lightly through their high leaves. Watching the weaving bowers shift slowly by, Camgeen came to the realization that he was laid out on some kind of litter, and that he was moving. On either side of him walked his men. They marched slowly, eyes low and shoulders hunched. The tribesmen were smeared with blood, their armor scored. Four of their strongest carried him on a shield across their shoulders. Despite his size and weight and their evident weariness, they bore their burden without sufferance. Men of the tribes were not like other men. Though it was many decades since Camgeen had ridden the steppe, battled hobgoblin and ogre and worse every day simply to live for one more day of struggle, the pride he took in his people's prowess was as strong as it had ever been.
"Demay,"
he mouthed, addressing the tall warrior to his right. The man wore a coat of iron and leather scales, woven together with a backing layer of silk and worn over a sleeveless silk vest. His head was shaved, but for a topknot. An elaborate tattoo of an eagle spread its wings over one cheek. The warrior did not answer. Weakly, Camgeen rolled his head around to the left.
"Kidu, what struck me? Was it him?"
Still no answer. The men marched on like dead men to the underworld. Camgeen tried to remember the end of the battle, but it was a blur of screams and fire. It had been as one-sided a rout as any he had come to expect from this soft land. Except for the dwarf. Yes, he remembered something now. The dwarf had been a foe worthy of Kamgin's gifts. Then there had been a loud bang, and then he winced as the memory brought with it an unpleasant throbbing pain in between his shoulder blades. He worked his mouth. It was as dry as the great steppe, but he managed to separate his lips and move his tongue.
"Was the warrior slain? Did the Dark Master make a martyr of his enemy?"
"No, Lastborn, he was not. You failed, as I foresaw that you must."
A woman walked behind the bier, dressed and hooded in black, with face downcast like a widow. From the stoop of her back and the strands of white that strayed from her hood, Camgeen judged her to be old, but immortality tempered such assessments, and her voice rang as clear as the warning call of an eagle. Something about her presence put a sepulchral chill into Camgeen. He turned to his men, but they walked on as if they were unaware of her or of him, ghosts in each other's worlds. He clenched his eyes tight and felt for the spark of power within him. This was a dream, or perhaps a vision, such as those in which Nergui purported to see the future, brought on by blood loss and pain.
I bested Gorgoth the Gargantuan in mortal combat that lasted 8 days and nights. I broke the numberless hordes of Hobgobla Khan and brought to heel the beasts of the Sirokish. I am the last born of Kagashfel. I do not fail.
The Dark Master cares not for your sacrifice. He is not appeased with oaths or with deeds. He does not desire your devotion.
The woman nodded imperceptibly to one side. A ghostly figure ran through the trees there. The dwarf? Kamgin could see his bright orange crest through the moist bark. The tattoos that covered his monstrously muscular frame were a translucent blue, at times indistinguishable from the whorls and branches behind him. In silence the spectre of the dwarf ran, battling his way through enemies that Kamgin could not see. The dwarf ran behind a tree, and for the brief duration of his passage it ceased to be a tree and was a pillar, square-sided and mighty, soaring towards a vaulted ceiling where fiery golden runes glimmered like bleeding stars. Something about them reminded Kamgin of the histories his father had told, of when the tribes had lived under the yoke of the Chaos Dwarfs of Zar. Before he could think on it further, the pillar was a tree again, and the dwarf emerged from behind it with a man in tow. It was an empire man in a red cloak, wielding what appeared to be a powerful magical sword. Kamgin did not recognize him, but a tingling in his wounded spine told him that he should.
What am I seeing?
What I see,
the woman replied. A chill entering his bones, Kamgin pushed himself up onto his elbows.
I have seen you in my dreams before. It was you who showed me the tribes riding westward to make war on the Empire. Who are you?
The woman bowed her head slightly, bringing up her hands in the same motion to draw back her hood. Despite his own godly favor, Kamgin gasped. Her skin was a strange mix of light and dark, like rubbed chalk. Her lips, however, were jet black, as were the small horns that rose through her frost-white hair. The most unnerving thing about her, however, was her eyes. Their coloration constantly shifted and changed, like a candle behind stained glass, and Kamgin felt certain that there were prophecies reflected there that could raise a man to the heights of the gods if he could interpret them without succumbing to madness.
A servant. I observe and follow. History will not record my name.
Kamgin struggled to meet her shifting gaze. With a spurt of panic, he noticed that everything around her was darkening. He was still moving, but his men were gone, as was the forest. He blinked into the nothingness that surrounded him. It wasn't just a void left by the retreat of the mortal world. It was a thing, with a cruel will and a terrible purpose of its own. He saw the silver outline of the witch before she vanished. She was haloed by something horned and dark, something vast and incalculably ancient, with a capacity for hate that left the Chaos Warrior quailing and small.
Darkness closes on me,
he hissed. The woman's voice echoed from the shadow.
Not only on you.
Chapter 3. Bad Tidings. The punch hit the Hochland corporal like a swinging morning star, and crunched knuckles into the man's breastplate almost exactly like one. The man flew back, piling through the table that had been assembled from a plank and two barrels, and scattering maps like feathers from a game bird brought down with a harquebus.
Liar!
Gotrek roared, striding through the mess to drag the semi-lucid soldier back to his feet in a fist like an iron corbel. Despite being a foot shorter than anyone present, the Slayer filled the command tent with raw, muscular presence and sheer bad attitude. His bulging arm glistened wetly, rainwater having rid him of enough blood and dirt that the spiraling tattoos looked vivid enough to be freshly drawn. He glared at the man, his one good eye bloodshot red.
You expect me to buy this tripe about gods and
demons and all the rest of it?
Another soldier in a red and green surcoat, with torn sleeves and a shirt of mail, broke one of the empty crates that had been deployed as seating across the slayer's back. Gotrek grunted, staggered, shrugged splinters off his shoulders, and then cuffed the man unconscious. He shook the corporal in his grip.
I can't hear you, manling! Put him down, Gotrek! Felix ordered, staggering in from the rain with cheeks red from running and sword drawn, just as the slayer drew back his fist for another punch.
At the same time, a rattling series of clicks announced pistols and harquebuses being cocked and primed. A line of men in a mishmash of bastardized liveries and gear dropped to one knee, laying their firearms over the upturned seating and drawing a bead on the bristling slayer.
Aim,
said Gustav with incongruous levity, wearing a grim expression that was no less a smile for that. Like everyone else, he hadn't yet had a chance to change following the recent battle. His ponytail was pasted to his face with rainwater, and his white plate was dashed with wet smears of red. He looked like a highwayman, fresh from the stage of a Taradash play, and an altercation with the evils of womanly virtue and corrupt imperial justice. He reminded Felix rather too much of Ulrika.
You'd let him shoot me, manly,
Gotrek growled flintily, still staring at the Hochland corporal, but clearly now addressing Felix.
Don't tempt me, Felix thought,
but somehow managed to grind his teeth and not speak. Gotrek must have noticed the tightness in his jaw, however, because he turned to fix Felix with a glare. Felix's fingers didn't stray from his sword. With a grunt, Gotrek let the man go. The Hochlander clattered bonelessly in amongst the scattered maps, and for a moment Felix thought the slayer intended to leave one last boot in the ribs. But then Gotrek turned and stomped to the corner of the tent without another word. There he picked up a crate and planted himself on it, crossing his arms across his barrel chest. Felix allowed himself to relax. The line of harquebusiers and pistoliers visibly sagged with relief. Sheathing his sword, Felix waved in the gaggle of company sergeants that had decided a tactical withdrawal to the cover of the pouring rain was preferable to crossing Gotrek Gurnison. He shook his head wearily as men returned to reset the seating, fix the table, and sort through the maps that had fallen on the floor. A too young lad with haunted eyes and gore-drenched woolen coveralls, 2 months apprenticed to a chirurgeon before the armies of the Ever-Chosen had ground his regiment underfoot, applied a grubby cloth to the fallen man's brow. Felix took advantage of the lull to check on the arrangements, such as they were. Rain drummed on the canvas sheet that had been spread between two banner poles, and the rear compartment of a wagon loaded with crates, barrels, and sacks, most of them empty. In its former incarnation, ferrying ore of less than dwarfish quality on the Kadrin Road to the less discerning marketplaces of Osterwald, Beckerfen, and Kislev City, it had been the property of old Lorin Lanaxon and his son Linden. They sat in the unsheltered front of the cart, soaking in the misery as only two dwarfs together could. A single storm lantern swayed with the wind from a pole attached to the wagon's rear. A gaunt-looking Cossar and a bald-headed bruiser in the black and dirty off-white of Ostland each took one end of the table and reset it across the two barrels. When they noticed Felix watching, they threw a salute, which Felix returned with an inner sigh. The Cossar sergeant made a show of assessing the table's stability with a gentle rocking before declaring it fit for the maps to be relayed. Men in the state colours of provinces from across the empire's north and east, and with golden epaulets on the slashed shoulders of their doublets, gathered around the pages of soggy parchment in hand. Each man commanded anything between 5 and 25 men. Sergeants, so titled by Felix, whose patience for provincial variation in military hierarchy was thinner than the wool of his cloak, of the ad hoc fighting companies that had tagged along on Felix and Gotrek's long westward trek. On the table, individual charts were strategically positioned under stone paperweights, so that the overlap of one fed vaguely into the next to fashion a map of the entire empire. Areas where chaos was known or rumoured to have conquered had been filled with pencil drawings of hideous monsters that left Felix with grave concerns as to the artist's state of mind. Even without those personal worries, it made for unsettling viewing. The only parts of the map that looked healthy were to the south, and then only because they did not know any better. Demons capered around the walled symbols of Becker Fen and Osterwald, filling the forested spaces of Ostland and Ostermark, and nibbling at the edges of Talapheim itself. A great tentacled monstrosity reared out of the sea of claws, as if to drag Erengrad into the water, and stick-figure longboats, peopled with gibbering horrors, closed on the Marienburg Delta. Felix decided that whoever was responsible should never be allowed near pencil or paper again.
"You have timing of Urson for his seasons?" said Kolya, lounging against the wagon's tailboard, as he had been throughout, chewing on a pungent blend of locally foraged herbs and tobacco.
"Zoboika might have killed that man."
"Remind me later to thank you for the help," Felix replied. The Kislevite pursed his lips, cocked his head slightly as though listening intently to the rain, and shrugged.
"No matter."
The Hochlander moaned, taking a swallow of water from the cloth that the young chirurgeon squeezed into his mouth. Felix dropped down beside him. The man had a long mane of dark hair, crushed from being all day inside a helmet. His beard was dashed with white, and cleft by a scar that cut across his left cheek from the corner of his lip. His breastplate was almost brown from mud, blood, and rust, and so well beaten that in places it had more edges than a chewed coin. The vicious dent left below the collar by Gotrek's fist was hardly the worst of it. A bronze-coloured epaulette shimmered dully from the red shoulder of his padded tunic. A singular leather vambrace that was scratched almost white hung loose on one strap. He looked up vaguely at Felix, and, to his minor irritation, saluted.
"Corporal Herschel Mann, my lord. Hergig City Militia. At your service."
Felix raised an eyebrow and smiled at the slumped soldier.
"At ease, Corporal."
"Aye, sir,"
the man murmured. "I apologize on behalf of my, friend," said Felix, glancing across to Gotrek, who returned the stare with diamond tips. "I assure you he's the same with everybody." The man took another squeeze of water and swallowed nervously.
"Forgive me, my lord. He asked if I had news of Altdorf, and I told him I did. Several of the men with me were attached to Reichland regiments, garrisoned in the outlying countryside during the fall."
To Felix, the air suddenly felt too thick to breathe. His heart didn't seem to want to beat.
"The fall of what?"
asked Gustav.
"Of Altdorf," said Corporal Mann. "The fall of Altdorf, my lords."
Shouts of denial rose from the company's sergeants, who had not already been present to hear the news with Gotrek. Most of them had been enlisted men serving in regiments on the Empire's hinterlands, or, in the case of the Kislevite contingent, beyond it. Felix doubted whether half of them had ever been to Altdorf, but that didn't matter. It was the seat of imperial power, home to its most exalted institutions and most decorated regiments. A cultural home, if not an actual one. It was unconquered and unconquerable. It was Altdorf. Felix stared at the shattered soldier for a long moment, not entirely comprehending. He felt the stool kicked out from under his heart, the noose tightening around his neck as it dropped. The disbelieving chorus of his men blended together into a whining note of white noise. Deep down, he had suspected that even the great citadels of Reichland could not stand against the forces he had seen heading towards them. Mentally, he had prepared himself for it, but to have it confirmed hit him emotionally like a kick in the gut. Felix raised his left hand to his eyes. The lantern light reflected from the angular edges of his ring, short-lived tears of ethereal gold.
"No."
He forced himself to swallow, and then to look up. Sound crashed back in a tumult of angry, frightened voices. He turned a look of anguish to the corner where Gotrek sat, arms crossed and surrounded by empty chairs. There was a grimness on the dwarf's face that Felix didn't like. A blue vein bulged from his temple, and he appeared to swell as he clasped hands to his enormous biceps and stared through Felix into the rain. West, to Altdorf. Returning to Altdorf and reuniting Felix with Kat, and perhaps expunging some guilt of his own in doing so, had been Gottschalk's unwavering goal for over a year. In all of Felix's own worries and doubts, he'd never thought to consider how his former companion would respond to failure.
"Lies," said Gottschalk in a voice that could ground gravel. "He didn't tell you the rest. Said Sigmar's own second bloody coming fought and lost. And there's more, too, if your head's not already too full of foolishness to hear more."
Gottschalk snorted angrily.
"Gods! Manling nonsense, if ever I heard it!"
"What of the Emperor?"
said Gustav, lifting his voice above the clamour.
"Safe, I heard,"
said Mann, relieved to have something positive to share with his rescuers.
"The old king of Bretonnia rode to his aid, and—"
He glanced anxiously towards Gottschalk.
"And the gods themselves."
A few men made signs to Sigmar and Ulrich across their chests. Kolya chuckled dryly.
"We could use some of that, no?"
"Gods or Bretonians?" Gustav murmured, a half-smile teasing his troubled mask. Kolya shrugged.
"So long as they bring their horses."
The Cossar sergeant by the table trumpeted with laughter. The Auslander across from him gave both Kislevites a damning look. They had lost their country months ago. Most of the men in the room were feeling the loss of theirs only now. Felix merely bowed his head, part of him determined never to look up again. Altdorf had been more than just a distant symbol. It had been hope. It had been his hope.
"We should head south,"
said Gustav, taking a steadying breath and striding forwards to plant a finger on one of the clearer portions of the map.
"Averheim, say. It's a long way, but it should be as far from the northern and eastern prongs of the Chaos Incursion. The Emperor has to rally his forces somewhere, and it's as likely a place as any."
"How far?"
asked a slender, faintly well-born man in scuffed leather armour and a steel breastplate, with a big dent over the right breast and a burgundy sash over the opposite shoulder.
"Fair off now, anyway,"
added another man, this one in forester's gear, with an unstrung bow over his shoulder, leaning over the maps.
"We're shadowing the Talabek Road, a few days out from Talabheim."
Gottschalk tightened his arms about his chest and grumbled.
"Assuming we ever move again."
"Talabheim?"
Mann started, before Gottschalk guillotined whatever he wanted to say with a glare. The slayer sat stubbornly, but something forlorn in the Hochlander's face made him grudgingly relent.
"Spit it out before you get a nosebleed! Another one!"
"Forgive me again, Master Dwarf, but you are nowhere near Talabheim. Fortunately, for it's fallen too. You're in Hochland."
"Bah!"
said Gottschalk, rising suddenly and stamping a foot upon the ground, setting his nose chain to clinking.
"Talabek land, or I'm a tree man."
"I saw mountains from the hill, Gottschalk," said Felix quietly. He didn't want to put himself into another argument with the slayer, but you couldn't disagree with a mountain. And what did it matter now, anyway? Altdorf had fallen.
"There are no mountains in Talabek land, Manling,"
said Gottschalk, as if that settled it.
"My lord, if you'll forgive me."
Corporal Mann raised a hooked elbow that Felix took to pull the man up. The man stumbled against him, giving a sour hit of days-old sweat and armour grease, and then moved towards the map table. He pressed his finger into the map. The grimy digit fell on a bull-horned icon surrounded by double-ringed walls and set amidst a proliferation of barren-looking mountains.
"We were following the main road, north out of Hergik to Wolfenberg, and have been for about 5 days. As I said, Talabheim fell the autumn before last, after a 6-month siege. Hergig's always been off the main road, and it's been a blessing of late, enough for the city to hold out until now."
"What changed?"
said Gustav.
"A warlord named—"
Man's lips contorted around the foreign name.
"Kagash Fell. I'm told it means half-ogre, because he has the strength and stature of 5 men.
"Is that all?"
Gottschalk grunted.
"It was he that broke the walls of Hergig,"
said Mann, somewhat defensively.
"Walls of questionable standard from the outset, no doubt."
Sounds like mighty doom to me,
muttered Kolya, offhand, around a mouthful of half-chewed herbal sludge.
Do you deliberately taunt me with things I cannot have, remember it? I can have no doom, not until the manling is safe within the walls of Altdorf and at the little one's side.
Felix heard the incongruous sound of laughter, and to his astonishment found it was his, bleak and despairing, slow as the death of his world.
Have you heard a word anyone's been saying, Gotrek? Altdorf is gone. Kat is gone. The Empire is gone.
His voice rose steadily, emphasizing each additional loss with a thump of his hand.
To hold and to protect, manling,
Gotrek intoned, voice sinking to a cavernous timbre.
To keep forever from the earth until Gazul sunders you.
It took Felix a moment to realize that Gotrek was reciting the final lines of the oath that had made him and Kat husband and wife. They had been wed under the dim ruby glimstones of Karak Kadrin Shrine of Grimnir, and it was not lightly that a slayer invoked the name of Gazul, guardian of the honored dead. Bitterness rose on bubbles of laughter as Felix spread his arms as if to encompass the blackness that enveloped them. It was getting easier. The borders of the Empire were tightening like a noose around their necks. It was all too easy to believe that the end of everything was nigh, just out there, under the pouring rain.
We're sundered, Gotrek. The armies of chaos march on our roads, garrison our cities. Now Altdorf.
Felix clutched his hair as if intending to claw out the grey.
By any measure, we are done,
coward.
Coward,
said Felix, fury causing his voice to climb.
What kind of courage is it to deny what's going on out there? It's time to stop being so damned stubborn and admit it.
Some of us keep the oaths we make, manling.
Felix's fist clenched. His voice dropped to a hiss.
I always kept my oath to you.
Aye, Gotrek sneered. To the letter.
And just what's that supposed to mean?
Gotrek waved his hand with a growl and turned to Corporal Mann, who had been watching the exchange with a look of rising horror.
Just assuming that you're not conniving with dark powers, what were you hoping to find in Wolfenberg?
Nothing's really, Master Dwarf. We intended to track the main roads that far, and then strike out for the Middle Mountains, skirting some westward until we make it to Middenheim. 10 men could defend the Faustschlag against 1,000. Archaon's tried and failed before, and with Altdorf gone, it's the last great city still standing. It's where everyone will be going now.
Gotrek's one eye glittered dangerously, like a dwarf with an oath to keep.
No, said Felix. Absolutely not. You are talking about a journey of months, if not more, and with no guarantee we'll find anything at Middenheim other than all the hordes of Archaon waiting outside.
If we're lucky, he thought, but reminded himself of his position amongst these men and decided not to say it.
It's madness. I, for one, don't see too much wrong with Gustav's plan. I've never been to Averheim. Perhaps that is where the Emperor will go. And perhaps with aid from the dwarfs, too. It's near their world's edge mountain strongholds, after all.
The men murmured approvingly at that, partly, Felix suspected, because it had come from him, but also because the only dwarf most of them had ever encountered was Gotrek, and a few more of the slayer at your back was as appealing a prospect as it would be infuriating. They weren't to know that Gotrek was exceptional, even amongst his own tenacious kind. The slayer emitted a disparaging snort at the idea, to which Felix was tempted to add a round of sarcastic applause.
Oh, that's how to keep up morale in the end times.
Why go all the way around the Middle Mountains, when you can go through them?
Lorin's whisper-thin voice drew everyone's attention towards him. The longbeard inserted his cane shakily between the floor of the cart and the upright of the tailboard. The hardwood cane was ironclad and topped with a handhold shaped in the form of a hammer, and in any other pair of hands but his, might have made for a serviceable weapon. The frail old dwarf remained as broad as two men, but he was gaunt as any dwarf Felix had seen outside of the besieged dwarf hold of Carrag-dûm. Heavy pink bags hung from his watery eyes. A zigzagging scar ran up one fleshy cheek to his temple. The inexpert stitching and the horrendous bite that it had closed still visible. His beard had been torn from that side of his face, except for a few sad little tufts. What remained was as thin and wispy as a smoke ring blown into the rain, and as if to emphasize that, he had a long-stemmed wooden pipe loosely clenched between his lips. It was unfilled and unlit, but both Lorin and his son had previously assured Felix that they liked to remind themselves of the taste. The longbeard's lip ticked nervously at the attention, and he steadied himself with a firm grip on his cane.
"There are ways, Gotrek. You know that. The ancient ways of our ancestors, beyond the guile of any man or beast to find."
"Are you talking about the underway?" said Felix, clenching his fists to calm himself and looking determinedly away from Gotrek, lest his temper explode again.
"There are no dwarf holds in those mountains, manling, so no," said Gotrek, exasperated as though reprising a tired argument. "And I've told you a dozen times over, Lanaxon, there's naught in those pauper's peaks but legends. Tales good for nothing but drinking a dwarf's gold."
"I speak not of minerals or gems, Gotrek, as you well know."
"Bah!"
Felix glanced at the map. He had never been to the Middle Mountains, and, if he was honest, had never felt any great yearning to. No vengeful wight haunted them, and there were no rumours of robber barons lording over decrepit castles in their heights. There was simply nothing there, unless one placed value on bare rock and year-round snow. Even the Grey Mountains harboured enough base minerals to keep a handful of dwarf clans in ale. But then Felix had heard Gotrek speak about grey dwarfs in the same disparaging tones as he did humans.
"Then just what exactly is supposed to be in those mountains?" asked Gustav.
"Fairy stories older than your empire," said Gotrek, then scoffed. "Older than ours, if you're fool enough to believe them."
Felix felt a prickle of unease run through his skin. The fractured empire of the dwarfs was said to be almost 10 millennia old. Intuitively, a myth did not survive for so long unless it concealed a grain of truth, and ancient dwarfish legends were exactly the sort of thing that Felix wanted to avoid. They conjured images of high ranges and vast vaulted deeps, of stone-hearted gods and rune weapons with the power to raise mountains and sunder continents. Not for the first time he wished Max were here, but to Felix's mind, Gotrek had no basis on which to be so diffident. Everywhere one cared to look, prophecies were being fulfilled, and forgotten myths realized left, right, and center. Even while he had been in Kislev, Felix had been hearing rumors Sigmar had arisen, battling the demonic hordes in Ostermark. But Felix had been through Ostermark. If that was the best that even Sigmar could do, then Felix was at a loss who was supposed to save them now. Gotrek stroked his beard thoughtfully.
"I say there are no dwarf holds in the mountains, but there was one once, thousands of years ago, and whatever else they may or may not harbour, there are roads through them."
"And these roads lead to Middenheim,"
said Gustav again, earning an impatient scowl from the slayer.
"They're the secret ways of the dwarfs," Gotrek replied. "The Manling, my rememberer, and Lanaxon and Linden may come with me. Everyone else has been slowing us down too long already."
His gaze swept the tent without a trace of human kindness.
"You're all on your own from here on."
A stunned hush descended on the gathering. Collier's eyebrows arched as though he hadn't been fully paying attention until now.
"Well,"
began Lorin, cheek twitching furiously, however hard he tried to hold on to his cane. Its hardwood base stuttered against the tailboard.
"I'm sure that we could make an exception given the circumstances. Being the end of the world as it is, I'm positive that Grimnir would understand—"
"I should have left that chaos hound to gnaw on your skull a little longer, Lanaxon. Have you forgotten what it means to be a dwarf?
The Longbeard's lips ticked. Gottrek had always been hard, but Felix could not remember him ever being deliberately cruel. The dwarf who stood before him now was not the same one to whom Felix had once sworn an oath of friendship over a river of ale in an Altdorf tavern all those years ago. He was embittered and twisted, either by the horrors he had witnessed or those he had wrought himself, and had darkened as the world around him darkened. It was surprising to look back and realize that Gottrek had once had soft edges. But it was true. He'd enjoyed good beer and good pipeweed, had on occasion been moved to make a joke and even smile at some of Felix's. He had reveled in good food and had shared every dwarf's passion for gold and old debts. It was as if all of that had been chipped away, and all that remained now was the iron core. The Slayer. "You will condemn these men to their fates," said Felix, angry again before he even realized he was speaking. "And if they insisted, what then?
Would you kill them?
My own nephew? Perhaps I should expect no less from a kinslayer."
"What did you call me?"
Gottrek rumbled dangerously, squaring up to Felix.
"You heard!"
Felix shouted in the Slayer's face.
"I've been hearing about superior dwarf hearing for long enough to know that."
Some trace residue of common sense urged Felix to stop there, but he felt as if a dam had just been breached. Gottrek had killed Snorri, the best of them by any measure of common goodness. They hadn't spoken of it since Prague. Felix had tried not to think of it. Even Gustav and his men had taken the hint and pretended it had never happened. They had their own reasons to forget those events, and sometimes hours could go by in which Felix actually believed it. But then he would hear the splitting of bone in his mind, and see the blood seeping through the snow between his boots, and know that it had. Felix had failed to stand up to the Slayer then, and every day the guilt of it gnawed at him, and he damn well wasn't going to let things go the same with Gustav, Max, or anyone else for that matter.
"You are the coward, Gottrek. You're stubborn, block-headed, and you can go and bury your head in the Middle Mountains if you want, but Gustav and I will be taking our men to Averheim."
Gottrek regarded him stonily.
"You done?"
Felix let out a hot breath and nodded.
"We're done, Gottrek. There's nothing you can say to convince me to leave all these men behind."
"Nothing."
"Nothing."
"Good. We can cut straight to it, then."
There was a smack of impact in the center of Felix's face, and he staggered back. He heard what sounded like a pistol going off, but that might equally have been the sound of Gottrek's knuckles cracking his jaw. Disbelief swam through his mind. Gottrek had hit him. The Slayer had never hit him before. His limbs turned to jelly as, still stumbling back, he tried to draw his sword. He saw two slightly blurred Slayers crack their knuckles before being suddenly whisked away. Felix's last thought before he hit the ground was to realize that he was falling. He was unconscious before he had another. Chapter 4. Half-Ogre. Fire spat into the rain, struggling like bound sacrifices from stakes 8 feet high. 8 of them formed a ring to enclose a portion of the cobbled square. Behind that line of fire was held a dark, roaring sea of bestial heads and pointed helms, many armed trophy poles and rippling banners. Out of the hundreds whose voices could be heard, only 8 were visible from inside of the ring. 2 semicircles of proudly attired warriors with the courage and conviction to back one champion against another. Each held a weapon in either hand. The 2 combatants bore none. Kagash Fell paced the border of his side of the ring with his giant stride. Cracked and ancient armor hung loosely from his broad shoulders, a battered harness of black hellsteel plates, faded runes and dead-eyed demon faces. Long shanks of sodden grey hair scrawled down both pauldrons, his grey beard reaching as far down as his folds. He wore it in thick braids, in the manner of the dwarfish slavers that dominated the lands and culture of the eastern steppe. With his one good eye, he studied his challenger. The other was lidless, milky and blind, ruined by the overlapping rings of the slave rune that branded the left side of his face. The other slept within its bed of flesh, within his forehead, a slit of faint sapphire light bleeding onto his brow. With the brazen arrogance of a warrior 3 times heavier than his opponent, and all 4 of his supporters, Buruk Doombul mirrored his steps. Huge interlocking plates of spiked iron and bronze clanked as the Minotaur moved, and 3 rune-engraved skulls swung from the chain that tied them to his waist. A black iron helm with articulated cheek guards enclosed his massive head. Ruby-red eyes gleamed hungrily within. A pair of forward-curving horns, barbed with steel blades, thrust out from behind the cheek guards. Hot breath snorted from his snout, steaming the brass ring that pierced his nostrils. The angular mark of Khorne reddening fleetingly as the surrounding metal cooled.
"I am Buruk, Doombul of Kislev,"
snorted the Minotaur, his every word a bellow that made the braziers flicker and shake.
"His hooves are its ashes. His blood is his blood. His herd follows Kagas Fell for more war."
The Minotaur stamped 1 brazen hoof, clenched every bulging muscle into a savage knot of fury, and bellowed until it seemed the ground must crack.
"More war! Where are his skulls? Where is his victory?"
Kagas Fell gave Buruk the hard face, the impassive mask of the steppe peoples. He raised his right arm high. Rain coursed down the scarified vambrace. His hand, however, like his face, was unarmored, and he presented it to the crowd like a relic. It was blotched yellow with age, covered by bruise-like markings of faded tribal tattoos.
"I am Kagas Fell, and you know me."
His voice was cracked like his armor, deep like the hell that awaited this world. It pushed through the hammering rain like a blade-bossed shield for all to hear and bear witness.
"With this hand did I strike down Buruk the Black and lead the uprising against the gates of Zar. It was I who broached the mountains of Morn and smote down Grulgor Thundergut and took his lands for our lands."
He lowered his arm and swept it around the ring, marking the shadowed faces that lay hidden beyond the torchlight.
"It was I who first brought you the power of the greater gods. I who won you freedom and then gave you glory. We are one people, and there will be glory untold for us in the days ahead."
The reverential silence that followed his words was broken only by the smack of rain on stones, the hiss of tormented flames, and then by the sonorous, panting laughter of the Doombul.
"Take your weapon, Buruk, if you believe you can find the host of Archaon quicker than I, or leave this ring now and do not challenge me again."
Buruk emitted a fiery snort, then rolled his neck, the blades that tipped his horns glinting golden in the firelight.
"Half man is small and furless. Doombul needs no weapon, but as is tradition."
Keeping both bead-like eyes on Kagas Fell, the Minotaur turned to his supporters. 3 were broad, heavily built beastmen wearing ill-fitting but ornate suits of lightly banded steel. Mail skirts hung to their fetlocks. Animal-skin cloaks were buckled at their throats. In the dark, it would have been easy to mistake them for winged lancers of Kislev. The 4th was a chaos warrior in brooding black plate, ringed with spikes, brass etchings, and grisly trophy hooks hung with severed body parts and parchment scraps. Kagas Fell commanded the loyalty of hundreds of such warriors, and he did not know this man's name, but he remembered that he was a man of Empire stock, and had been an exalted champion in his own right until Kagas Fell had crushed him and claimed his men. The man's customs and thinking were strange to a man of the steppe. In the Empire, it seemed, a lord expected the fealty of his warriors, who gave it without question. Amongst the tribes, a lord would buy the loyalty of the strongest warriors with gifts and glory. and what was true for men was true also for the gods, only more so. One of the big beastmen strained to offer up a huge spiked mace, and Boruk took it, wielding it lightly in one massive fist. A smile teased at the corners of Kargashfel's self-control. The hum of demonic energy filled his gut, battle rage coursing through his veins like the aqueducts of fire that fed the desolation of Zar. It was in moments such as these that one felt the interconnectedness of chaos. A man could take pleasure from killing, from the staging of a slaughter, and the revelry that followed. It was madness to hollow one's existence by denying the gifts of all the gods but one. On his forehead, the eye of Katchar snapped open. A murmur of dread and awe passed through the watching warriors, stretching out towards the deep yawn of time as the world around Kargashfel slowed to a crawl. He could see the individual gobbets of flame that spat out from the torches, watch each drop of rain as it smashed against Boruk's helmet into hundreds of tiny, infinitely reflective pieces. In contrast to the stalled immensity of the Minotaur, the sepia-tinted shades that danced around him were a disjointed blur of action, reaction, and possibility. Kargashfel felt his heart beat faster. Even this brief and incoherent glimpse of the future was intoxicating. The temptation was always to look a little deeper, see a little further, but with an effort of will he pulled back. To see all that the eye would have him see was to duel with madness. Such prophecy was the domain of the gods alone. Absorbing as much of the following minute's most likely course as he could, Kargashfel held out his hand for a weapon. His hand moved towards the leather-scaled tribesman, as if through deep water. Of the 8 weapons presented, he selected an axe, and for a moment the future lost a measure of its uncertainty and became clear. Then the eye of Katchar closed. Kargashfel blinked away disorientation, the feeling of limitation that always followed the return to the present as the world resumed its normal pace and hue. He brought up his axe.
"I accept your challenge, Boruk."
The Minotaur thrashed his head through the air, as though fending off a demonic possession, then issued a thunderous bellow as he dropped his horns and charged. Kargashfel looked up as the doom bull loomed over him, opening up his massive chest to deliver a blow from his mace intended to crush the champion's skull in one hit. Exactly as Kargashfel had foreseen. He punched the head of his axe up into the doom bull's unarmored belly, forcing a wheeze of rotten, meaty breath from the Minotaur as he dropped to one knee. Kargashfel sidestepped, reversed his grip on his axe, and then lashed it back across the Minotaur's cheek guard. Blood and metal sparks sprayed from the open face of Boruk's helm, and Kargashfel strode behind him, lifting his bloodied axe above his head to the rapture of the crowd. Boruk rose slowly and turned, wiping his bloody snout on his wrist.
"You are a fool to goad the doom bull. I will break your bones and drink their juices, half-man."
Kargashfel made a come gesture with his axe. Nothing was as beloved by the gods as drama. With a howl of primal rage, the Minotaur roared forward, frenzied strokes carving through the air like a barrage of rockets. Kargashfel parried and dodged, always a second ahead of every blow. Each time Boruk paused in his assault for breath, Kargashfel was already exploiting the opportunity to back away, his axe throwing fresh blood from another shallow cut onto the cobbles. The howls from beyond the fireline grew more rabid with each libation. The eye of Katchar could not reveal every possible outcome, but he had become adept at sifting the improbable from the most likely, particularly with a battering ram such as Boruk Doombull. The Minotaur's torso bulged, as if being squeezed from below, his mace coming down like a meteor. Kargashfel made to move aside, then snarled. It was time for the Doombull and his supporters to see what they challenged. His hand swung up to shield his head, the Minotaur's mace hammering into his open palm and driving him down to one knee. The cobblestones beneath him shattered, blasted rock ricocheting between the two warriors' armor. Boric's bellow of victory turned into a disbelieving snort as the dust settled to reveal Kargash fell alive and unscratched, with the Minotaur's mace firmly in his hand. Kargash fell twisted the mace head aside and shoved Boric back with a kick in the gut as he rose. Kargash fell's heart thumped powerfully within his chest. He could almost hear the erratic boom, boom echoing from the underside of his breastplate. With a discipline forged over centuries into a mask of hell steel, he maintained the hard face as he flexed his ringing fingers. Inside he grimaced. That one he had felt.
"Your own god favors me more than he does you, Doomball. No weapon of fire or fireborn can harm me."
The torches danced on the tumultuous roar of acclaim.
"Another!"
Boric howled, throwing out his arm to his supporters for a weapon, any weapon. Quicker thinking than the beasts beside him, the black-armored Chaos Warrior snapped the steel head off his lance and threw the weapon into the ring. Boric caught it out of the air in his massive fist, as though it were a short spear, raising it overhead for a stabbing thrust and bringing up his mace to wield both like some monstrous demon-possessed war machine. The beastmen in the shadows bayed like starving wolves, shouting down the hiss of the tribesmen at this breach to the ancestral tradition of the challenge. Wary now, Kargash Fell stepped back. The eye of Kachar had not shown him this. Tossing his axe out of the ring, he turned and yelled back to his own supporters for his more favored weapon.
"Sunog! A sword!"
A tall warrior in armor of metal scales and a conical leather helm with a horsehair plume moved to obey. As the sword flew from the man's hand, Kargash Fell saw that a fifth figure now stood amongst his supporters. Everything seemed to slow down, as if the eye of Kachar showed him his future once again. The sword hung in midair, as though trapped in crystal. The shaman, Nurgui, was a flourish of color beside Sonog in his long, feather-like blue robes. Eagle feathers, animal teeth, and gemstones glittered in the firelight. Dozens of bead necklaces made a frill around his throat and across his narrow shoulders. An elaborate feather headdress screened his weather-scoured features from the rain and torches. Only his piercing amber eyes shone amidst the umbral shade. For a brief moment they met Kargash Fell's one. With a movement so subtle, it failed to disturb the chimes sewn into the streaming silk feathers of his robes. Nurgui shook his head. The sword sailed with celestial slowness into the ring. Kam Gin. A hammering filled Kargash Fell's head. The groan from his left guard brace announced the swelling of his bicep as his fists clenched. Fists that were turning a deep magma red. Steam hissed from the joints in his armor where the rain struck his bare skin. His lastborn was dead. Kargash Fell opened his mouth wide as if to cry out, but no sound issued forth but a strange hollow buzz, that of a swarm of maddened wasps sealed within a jar. There was a rising pressure in his gut, like the urge to vomit, only much more intense, and with an irresistible will of its own behind it. Steam poured off him, as with a resounding crack, his jaw dislocated and stretched still wider. His sword came towards him. Kargash Fell batted the blade aside,